Wir sind Theresa und
Nemo.
Und deshalb sind wir zu Shopify gewechselt.
Die Plattform, die wir vor Shopify verwendet haben, hat regelmäßig Updates gebraucht, die teilweise dazu geführt haben, dass der Shop nicht funktioniert hat.
Endlich macht unser Nemo-Boards-Shop dadurch auch auf den Mobilgeräten eine gute Figur. Und die Illustrationen auf den Boards kommen jetzt viel, viel klarer rüber, was uns ja auch wichtig ist und was unsere Marke auch ausmacht.
Starte deinen Test noch heute für 1 Euro pro Monat auf shopify.de/radio.
A few years ago, I was in the market for a new car. My car was starting to fall apart. Problems were rampant and the prices just kept getting higher and higher. And it was obvious that I was just dumping truckloads of money in a bottomless pit by this point. I was 19 and had already put over $10,000 into fixing the 1993 Corolla. And with the odometer reading approximately 300,000 miles, it is long past its lifespan. The original plan was to get a new car. I was in a comfortable position financially, had a decent paying job as a sales rep, and made much more than the average bloke around my age, and wanted a reliable SUV. My friends and I always went out to the desert, national parks in California where I resided, and was sick of getting teased for having the worst car of the bunch. I was about to go to the dealership and buy a new 2016 Highlander, since I was very loyal to Toyota, but decided I would thumb through the classifieds to see if there were any gems that were a few years old and listed for a great price. It was mostly junkers, people looking for cars, a couple false advertisements from companies trying to offer overpriced and unfair leases on new cars. But then I stumbled across an advertisement that caught my eye. It read, 2001 Jeep Wrangler, 1,100 miles, perfect condition, 500 OBO. I've never been a fan of Jeeps. They seem to burn through fuel way too fast and have problems that Toyota would never have. However, it was only $500 and 1,100 miles on a 15-year-old car is wild. Plus, something about the perfect condition intrigued me. I was curious how a 15-year-old vehicle could be in perfect condition. I decided to reach out to the seller and get more information. Hey, I was looking at your 2001 Jeep Wrangler. Can I come by and take a look? Within minutes, I had a reply waiting at my fingertips. Sure, followed by their address. I'll be home in an hour. The car is in the front. Feel free to check it out. Perfect. They lived about 10 minutes away from me, so I had time to get ready and call my friend Dave, who's a mechanic at the local auto shop, and see if he notices anything fishy about it. There's no way a car in perfect condition with only 1,100 miles on it could be $500, right? I arrived at the property, and to my surprise, the car appeared to be in perfect condition. It has a metallic silver paint job that looked not a day old. The windows were as clean as they were when they got out of the factory. There were no scratches, dents, or damage of any kind. I took a peek inside the vehicle. It was spotless. Not a single stain, dog hair, crumb, or any evidence that it had been used at all. I got on my knees and looked at the tyres, which appeared to be brand new and were the same factory wheels that Jeeps come with. The bottom didn't appear to have any damage or any sign that there was something off. What do you think, son? I jumped and banged my head on the bottom of the car upon hearing a voice. Oh my god, you scared the hell out of me. I thought you would be an hour. Ah, sorry honey, I just got back from the shops. Do you have any questions? The face that startled me was that of an older woman, who seemed to be about 80. She had a hunch and walked with a cane, but her skin was just so pristine. There wasn't a wrinkle on her face. Not a wrinkle on her hands or arms, and had a coat of red nail polish over her fingers that looked pristine. Just as I started to hoist myself from below the car, I saw Dave pull up in his Supra. I've always loved being in that thing. It attracted attention everywhere he went. I don't know if that was on purpose. Either way, it was great. He got out and introduced himself to the woman, who shook his hand and called herself Dot. I extended my hand out for a shake. Her skin felt smooth as a baby's. If you couldn't see her hair and hunch, you wouldn't be able to tell she was a day above 20. There wasn't a blemish to be found anywhere. It was admittedly a bit unsettling. I chalked it up to really lucky genetics, looked at Dave, and asked, "Do you mind if my body takes a look under the hood?" The woman blushed and said, "Oh, of course, dear," and shakily handed me a set of keys. The Jeep key looked as pristine as the car, and had no scratches or signs of use at all. I pressed the button to unlock the doors and pulled the hood latch from inside. Dave walked up and lifted it up. "You're gonna like this, Danny," he said, as I got out of the car and headed over to where he was. The engine bay was as clean as the rest of the car. Every component looked to be unused and perfect. He pulled out the oil stick, and it was clean, as if he had just changed it. The windshield wiper fluid was full and clean, and the filter was brand new. There wasn't a single nick or dust particle under the hood. "How did you keep this car so clean, ma'am?" he asked the woman, a bit apprehensive. It seemed he thought this might have been a stolen car, taken from a dealership or a showroom. "It was my husband's car. I've never set foot in the thing, honey." She began walking towards the hood. "He always had a thing for these machines, you hear. I never really liked them. I don't have my license. He always was out here, vacuuming, fixing something, cleaning another." She chuckled and looked right in my eyes. "I suggested he marry her if he loved her so much. He died shortly after, so the wedding never got around to happening. But I told him I'd make sure she found a good home. He loved his car more than anything. Even me, I'm afraid." I decided to pry deeper. "Cars?" She didn't reply and started walking inside. "If you want to take it for a test drive, feel free. Let me know when you've decided if you want it or not." She smiled once more, then disappeared through the doorway of the huge home. I wondered if she lived alone or had children to live with. It was such a big house for one little old lady, but she didn't seem very eager to share any more. I jumped in the driver's seat, opening the passenger door for Dave. The engine started fine. The gears seemed to shift like they do on the first drive, and there wasn't a single weird sound. The station that played was an AM station, some kind of classical music. I decided to let it be, since it wasn't too distracting. As we drove down the street and around the blocks, it got more and more confusing. There wasn't a single problem with the car. It was the smoothest ride I'd ever had. "What do you think is up with this car? Why is it so cheap and so clean?" I asked as we started to circle back to her house. Dave shook his head. "I don't know, man. It's the cleanest car I've ever seen. Runs better than my Supra. I would absolutely take this. Plus, it's a Jeep. Those are badass. You want a girl? You'll get one in this thing." I laughed and said, "Should I buy it instead of a Toyota?" as I pulled into a driveway. "If you don't, I think I might just buy it myself." We both shared a smile and got out of the car. I started walking towards the front door, pulling out the envelope in my pocket with five $100 bills. "Do you want it?" A voice from behind me startled me once more, causing me to drop the envelope and caused me a very obvious jump. "Damn, lady, you gotta stop sneaking up on me," I laughed and continued. "I'll take it. I have 500 in cash. Is that okay?" She took the bills out of my hand and said, "Everything you'll need is in the glove box." I shook her hand once more. Dot's hand was as smooth as last time and looked like it had never seen a day of wear. She had a crimson band on her ring finger and a matching pendant swinging gently from her neck. I took the Jeep's key off the keychain she handed me earlier and gave what was left back to her. She smiled and took the keys out of my hand. As I turned away to head back to the car, I heard her yell, much louder than I thought the woman's voice could project. "Wait!" I turned around immediately and looked at her quizzically. Don't change the station. She smiled at me once more, a smile that seemed disconcertingly large, and waved goodbye. I kept my gaze for a moment longer, then walked back to the car where Dave was standing. Your car now, eh? Yeah, she's all mine, I smiled, before shifting my gaze to the car, then back on Dave. She told me not to change the radio station. Do you think that there's a reason for that? I thought about it for a moment and shrugged. I assume she just really likes classical music. I wouldn't think too much of it. That seemed to resonate with me, and I hopped in the car and waved to Dave, who did likewise to me. I turned on the ignition, half expecting the entire car to fall apart as I did, but everything was smooth as last time. The radio picked up once again, playing classic instrumental, and I turned it down a little bit before putting the car in drive and heading home. I've now owned the car for a year. It seemed almost too good to be true. I was getting nearly 50 miles per gallon, which is insane for an older Jeep. I had zero problems with any component. The tires were always inflated to the right PSI despite my frequent off-roading and reckless driving. It handled high speeds beautifully and it felt so right. So much better than my Corolla did. I felt like a real man driving this thing around. At first, I thought the whole don't change the radio station thing was a sham. I was planning on burning some songs onto a CD and putting it in the CD slot later, but decided to just let it keep playing classical music. The station she had the car set on was so strange. I couldn't find any information about it online, and the music seemed to pick off right where it left off when I was last in the car. I was tempted many times to test changing it, but I started to question whether there was something else going on. You know, something a bit abnormal. Maybe the station was significant to the car's perfection. It seemed to be flawless, and the reception for that station was always strong, even when I went to the desert for a few days or underground in parking garages. I started bringing earbuds with me when I drove, or a portable speaker when others were in the car with me. It wasn't perfect, but I decided to just let it be. I could survive without playing music through the car's speakers. Plus, the classical music wasn't half bad. It seemed to get faster as my car sped up and slowed down as I slowed down. I'm sure it was a coincidence or something, but it was fun to keep track of. Plus, there were no adverts, which is something I absolutely hated on the radio and television. I was planning on my first huge road trip with the people I cared about most. It would be me, Dave, Stoss, and Stoss's girlfriend, Amber. We all loved nature and exploring, and the Jeep seemed like the best car to take together. So, we planned on going up to Northern California. We would leave after I got off work at 5 and just cycle through shifts of driving and sleeping until we made it to Shasta National Forest and explore down California until we made it back home. I was super excited, as we all were. Plus, maybe we could do a bit of off-roading in this seemingly immortal Jeep. We were set to leave in about 24 hours. I made sure to bring a really good sound system so nobody got bored or tried changing the radio. Amber and Stoss had never been in the Jeep before, so they wouldn't know anything about the classical station. I don't know if Dave remembers. He's never said anything when I drove him in the past, so I'm sure he did. Just in case, I put a little piece of duct tape over the auxiliary port and the CD player. That way, nobody would put anything in before I stopped them. I've never been one to believe in supernatural things, but I knew that I had to keep that station playing, no matter how badly I wanted to change it. I picked up Dave first, then Stoss and Amber, who were a bit higher north, and we set off. I left a bit later than expected because I had to address something at work, but it was no biggie. The minute Stoss got in the car, I knew this was going to be a long ride. What the hell are you blasting on the speakers, Dan? I laughed and turned the speakers up a bit to try drown out the classical music. I was a bit annoyed with Stoss's comment, but thought nothing of it. He put his ear up to the speaker on the rear left door where he was seated and shook his head disapprovingly. I thought about telling them about what the woman had told me, but decided to wait. We cruised onward. By this time, the sun was starting to set and we were getting close to Joshua Tree. Although I would have preferred to take a straight trip on the 5 northbound, all the way to our destination, Amber wanted to see Salton Sea, so we took a bit of a detour to get dinner and see the biggest sea in California. There was a traffic accident near Indio, the way Google Maps was telling us to go, so I decided to take a detour through Joshua Tree and stop for a bathroom break and change positions a bit. Throughout the trip, Stoss and Amber occasionally made comments about the classical music. I eventually shut them down and told them the story. Amber seemed to understand, but Stoss didn't waver his stance one bit and chalked it up to being a crazy old lady trying to scare me. As I got out of the car on the side of the desert road, Dave got out with me, and we spaced ourselves out to pee with some privacy. I walked about 20 seconds to the bush, and Dave did his business right behind the car. I started to walk back to the car, pulled a hand wipe out of my pocket, and started to clean my hands. I saw Stoss fumbling with the radio stations. I broke into a sprint towards the car, but it was too late. "Not everyone likes classical, Danny boy," he mocked and shuffled through the stations. Stoss eventually found an R&B station that he liked and started dancing in the passenger seat. I had a really, really bad feeling in my chest as I started the engine, but to my surprise, it started up the same as it had before. I, embarrassed that I believed a silly message that an old lady yelled at me, disconnected the speaker system and let him have his way. We had about 50 more miles of driving through Joshua Tree and the 62 would be in sight, and I would let Dave drive for a few hours while I rested, since I was beat from work. Even though everything appeared to be fine, I had this really bad feeling in my chest. I felt like something was off about this car. How about that woman? How did a 15-year-old car not have a single speck of dust in or out? The car was a bit dirty now, but the exterior seemed to never fade, and I hadn't accumulated a single scratch or dent in the car since I bought it. Either way, we trekked on, talking occasionally about what we would do in Shasta, or mocking each other. Normal stuff. "Hey Danny, how much longer until we get to the freeway?" Dave asked from the back seat. I took a minute to look at my phone, but there was no service, and the map was in a constant state of reconnecting. I couldn't see our location. The entire area was a sea of grey and white loading symbols filled the map. He was right in asking. It had felt like we were driving down Joshua Tree Road for much longer than 15 minutes. I looked outside and the road seemed to go on forever. Not one car had passed us since we stopped to go to the bathroom. "If we don't see it in 5 minutes, we'll turn around. I'm sure we're almost there," I said, shifting my focus back on the road. At the same time, I noticed the odometer was gaining shockingly quick. When we started the trip, the Jeep had about 10,000 miles on it total. It now had about 100,000, and we didn't seem to slow down one bit. I started to freak out and looked back at Dave, who was sound asleep. It must have been a mechanical glitch, which happens sometimes, I told myself, and kept on. But the odometer did as well. It was at 700,000 miles when I yelled, "Dave!" Dave jumped awake and looked at the odometer, then at Stoss, then me. "Turn that radio back to the classical station," he said, looking right into Stoss's eyes. I remember the number. It was 999 AM. I shoveled up to 920, 930, 940, 950, 960, 970, 980, 990, 1000. I tried to fine-tune the dial back, but it jumped to 998. I tuned it forward, and it brought me to 1000 again. "I can't find the station that it was on," I said, defeated. I decided to turn the car around and see if we can backtrack our steps and take the route Google originally told us to take. As I did, I heard a noise coming from the bottom of the car. Simultaneously, the windows cracked. All of the windows. Amber screamed, and Stoss looked around in shock. Dave had grabbed the vehicle's manual, but the radio page was torn out, of course. I motioned to speed up, but eventually realized that I was not in control of the speed. It was increasing, currently at 70 miles per hour, and was not slowing down. "The handbrake!" Dave yelled and pulled it. To my fear, the handle completely popped off, and the car didn't slow down one bit. As the speed increased, we all began to brace for impact, grabbing whatever backpacks or duffel bags we could find to cover our heads from glass and debris. The car was going 100 miles per hour, the brake was jammed in place and wouldn't move, and the gear shifting knob didn't budge one bit. In a last attempt to save us before the car accelerated past 100 miles per hour, I turned the steering wheel slightly to the right, and the car violently shook us as we crashed through cacti, bushes, rocks, and unsafe mounds of dirt along the side of the road. Eventually, the car began to slow down, and I motioned for everyone to jump out while we could. At about 20 miles per hour, I leaped out of the Jeep, simultaneously with Stoss, Amber, and Dave, expecting the car to soar onward until it was rendered useless. But it stopped only meters in front of where we landed. All four tires were flat and beyond the point of repair. The hood was completely dented. There was barely a remnant of glass on the windows, and the paint was scratched beyond buffing. Pools of gas and oil collected under the car, and the lights, including the headlights and interior lights, died at the same time. There was silence. Dave opened his mouth to say something, but nothing came out. I looked to my left and saw Stoss starting to get up. Amber was the only one who hadn't started to move. With all the energy I could muster, I crawled over to Amber and tried to wake her up, but I was met with no response. She had no pulse. It seemed she had hit her head on a rock of some kind, because there was a huge wound in the back of her head that was bleeding all over the place. I tried to fight the tears, but succumbed to them. Amber was dead. Stoss shortly looked over and noticed, and immediately jumped up and started walking towards me, anger in his eyes. "How the hell could you do this to us?" he screamed in my face, pulling me by the shirt up to see him. Stoss was a big dude. He could easily overpower me in a fight, and clearly realized this. "You're the one who got us into this," I spit back at him. He threw me against the stationary Jeep, which caused a huge dent to appear, much larger than my body. Dave, about the same size as Stoss, held him back from coming back for seconds, trying to calm him down. "What do we do now?" Dave asked the two of us. "I'm not driving this car one more meter. We have no service, nobody knows where we are, no cars have been by in hours, and Amber's dead over there." He motioned towards the corpse. "I'm going to walk down the road and see if we can flag someone down," I said. "It's our only hope." "Do you think we'd be safe to stay in the Jeep so we don't get mauled by something?" Dave shakily asked. "Are you serious? That thing is cursed, all because Stoss changed the radio. I wouldn't step foot in that Jeep." Stoss started motioning towards me, but Dave threw him back with more force than I expected from him. "I'm with Dave on this one. I don't think it's going to hurt us anymore. Even if something happens, we can just jump out the window, since they aren't exactly in place. Get lost and find someone to help us, Daniel." He spit in his direction and started limping towards the road. I looked back to see Stoss and Dave get in the back seat, looking at something in the front seat, most likely the odometer that I brought up earlier. The car didn't seem to be doing anything other than sitting in the middle of the desert. Maybe it was content with Amber's death, and it would leave us be. I had walked for about an hour, but for some reason there was no road to be found. I didn't recognize the surroundings at all. I had been to Joshua Tree in the past, but this was different. This wasn't Joshua Tree. There were no roads, no rocks, aside from the ones near the Jeep that we almost hurtled into. No lights. Just the endless stars in the sky and brush littering the desert sand. I think it's best to head back toward the car, I thought. Just as I was about to turn back, the light from the moon hit my body, and I saw the number 999 engraved in blood on my forearm. I shuddered looking at it. I know we all got scraped up from the crash, but I didn't notice that the number of the station was engraved on my forearm. Realizing it was probably the same for David and Stoss, I started sprinting back, gripping my leg as I hobbled over brush and pebbles. Just as I was nearing the car, I heard a blood-curdling scream. It was Stoss. I ignored every ounce of pain that cried out from my leg and sprinted towards the car. I saw Stoss in the back seat, curled up in a ball, shaking back and forth.
"Daniel, help! They took Dave!"
"Who took Dave?" I yelled back at him.
"These things. They came from the bottom of the car."
Just as Stoss said those last words, I saw four black hands crawl up from the two sides of the car and reach their arms through the two open windows. Two grabbed each side of Stoss's body, and as he screamed my name over and over again, they pulled at his muscular body until he exploded into a bloody mess and his body was no longer whole. The arms took the pieces of his body back under the Jeep effortlessly, and he seemed to disappear into the exhaust pipe. I stood in shock as I saw every single dent, scratch, and broken window repair themselves into pristine condition. In what felt like 5 minutes, the car was pristine once more. Not a single scratch lined the silver metallic body. The windows were scratch-free and looked like they were cleaned minutes before. I didn't know how to react. The car turned itself on and reversed to where I stood. I timidly walked up to the side of the car and put my hand on the door. The radio was once again playing classical music on station 999 AM, and the interior was completely ridden of dirt, dust and garbage. Our bags were nowhere to be found. It looked as if nobody had ever set foot in it. Just as I was about to get in, I felt a tap on my shoulder. "Enjoying the stars?" the old woman from earlier asked. I screamed and yelled at her to stay back. She seemed to understand my fear, but smiled. "Don't change the station," she whispered, and turned to walk back to the grey Mazda that I didn't realize was parked next to me. The entire setting had changed. The road was now visible, and there were a couple cars passing by. I looked around for Amber's body, but there was nothing except a rock in its place. I got in the car, buckled my seatbelt, and shifted the car in reverse. I didn't want to drive that car, but I had no other way to get home, and definitely didn't have the courage to ask the woman for help. Just as I was about to leave, I froze. The odometer read 1,103.
Wir sind Theresa und
Nemo
und deshalb sind wir zu Shopify gewechselt.
Die Plattform, die wir vor Shopify verwendet haben, hat regelmäßig Updates gebraucht, die teilweise dazu geführt haben, dass der Shop nicht funktioniert hat.
Endlich macht unser Nemo-Boards-Shop dadurch auch auf den Mobilgeräten eine gute Figur und die Illustrationen auf den Boards kommen jetzt viel, viel klarer rüber, was uns ja auch wichtig ist und was unsere Marke auch ausmacht.
Starte deinen Test noch heute für 1 Euro pro Monat auf shopify.de/radio.